Our first paper, Enabling Mine Automation Through the Application of OPAL and 3DRI Technologies. Our presenter is Evan Trickey. He is a software developer who specializes in aerospace and the defense industries and now the mining industry. He is going to share NEPTEC's experience with obscurant penetrating LIDAR. I'm not sure what that means, but I think we're all going to find out. NEPTEC is currently working with Tech and Barrick on adapting this technology for mining. How about a warm welcome? Oh, and I failed to mention, he's also going to have another gentleman with him who is a product lead mining engineer with PECTEC. How about a warm welcome from Evan?
Thanks, Steve. It's Dan Lucifora with PECTEC is joining me up at the podium today. I'll do most of the talking, but I need Dan here to help me with some of the questions that related to mining. As Steve mentioned, my background is primarily in software and with relation to NEPTEC's products. So what I'd like to talk to you today about is a new sensor system that we're bringing on the market that launched last month. It's called OPAL, and OPAL stands for Obscurant Penetrating Autosynchronous LIDAR. Big long name, but essentially it's a sensor system that's a LIDAR system that we've developed that we believe is a key technology for doing mine and heavy machinery automation where you're operating in areas where there's lots of dust, fog, snow, and rain that where traditional LIDAR would be nice but can't do the job because they're affected so heavily by the dust. So first, I'd like to start off and tell you a little bit about what NEPTEC does. We take the technology that's developed on the space side of our business. NEPTEC Design Group is the space side of the two parts of the company. They develop 3D vision systems machine automation. 3D laser systems for application to space, for autonomous rendezvous and docking, and other activities like that for resupplying the space station. And the NEPTEC Technologies is a spin out of that company to take that space technology and apply it to commercial markets. We take their innovative sensors, the real-time 3D algorithms that exploit that data, and feed in from the robotics side to be able to take 3D data and create actionable information that can be used for automation. A quick history of NEPTEC. The primary company, NEPTEC Design Group, was founded back in 1990. They've been an industry leader in developing 3D sensors. We've flown on many shuttles. We've had systems flying on the shuttles. We developed a system that helped put the space station together. It was a vision system. It was a camera photogrammetry system. And then we moved into laser systems. We had also the system right there, which is called the laser camera system. It was used to inspect tiles after the Columbia disaster. After the shuttles went into space, they used that system to do inspection of the tiles to see if there's any damage. The lower image is an infrared image from one of our flights of our autonomous rendezvous and docking sensors, the TRIDAR, which formed the base of where OPAL grew from. So OPAL, as you see there, is a sensor that's come from two sides. The OPAL technology was developed for helping helicopters landing in brownout conditions, and the novel scanning optics were developed for a robotic platform, and the NEPTEC Technologies has taken that those two technologies and put them together and created this ruggedized sensor system for use in harsh environments like mining and construction. It has a full 360-degree field of view, has different options for the vertical field of view. It can be 40 degrees, 45, or 60. It has the ability to penetrate obscurance, and when I talk about obscurance, I mean dust, fog, rain, snow. Acquires data at 200,000 points per second, and also has survey-grade performance in terms of its accuracy. It's accurate to within a centimeter over ranges up to 300 or 400 meters. Has various versions of the sensor that can see from to 400 meters or as far out as 2.7 kilometers, depending on the applications that are necessary. And it's completely sealed. There's no the only moving part is the scanning motor that spins the optics. So there's no heaters, nothing inside that or fans. So it's built to last. The intention is for it to have a 7 to 8 year life on the shovel. So it's built tough to last. The dome is field replaceable. It's there to protect things, and we know that things are going to smash into it, and they'll get broken. They can be replaced right on the shovel. The system, as I said, is sealed, so it's good to be power washed. You know, whenever it does get dirty, so it can take a real beating. And that's in the mining industry. That's what it needs to be able to handle. So I'll give you a quick overview. So the first one there is the early prototype that was flown on helicopters to develop the seeing through dust capability. This was the prototype that was built to run on a lunar rover. And then from that, we merged the electronics from this and the scanning from this to create this first commercial release, which I indicated has just been released onto the market. We're working to size reduce and reduce cost further and create a smaller and lighter package. This package is about 60 pounds. We're looking to get it down to 40 or below and in a smaller form factor. Another variant of that sensor is the Opal 120, which is basically just a forward-looking scanner for applications where you don't need the full 360 field of view. We're looking at that for some aerial applications again, potentially, or UAV-based, that sort of thing. So how does the sensor work? Basically, it's a modified an existing system that was modified, basically a Risley prism. Two rotating wedge prisms can generate a sinusoidal pattern like a rosette or something like that, depending on the speed of the two motors. We modified that and took out the upper wedge prism and added this hut prism, which basically takes what would be shining forward and bends it, and so that the inner prism creates a circle, and the upper prism then takes that and scans it in 360 degrees. So you're generating this pattern that you can adjust the speed of the motors can be such that you get the sparse data initially, and over time it rapidly fills in a very high density image, and I'll show you some examples of that. Again, this just sort of touches on the scan pattern. The first slide there is sort of a single circle from the inner prism, and then as the other upper prism moves, and this elapsed time represents microseconds, milliseconds. So you're creating overlapping loops, which create a very high density scan pattern as it progresses around. The next set of slides are some samples that we took local to our office in Kanata, Ontario. We were on the top of a building looking down at a parking lot and another building across that parking lot. The distance to the corner here as it's listed, stole my thunder there, as it's shown there, is 200 meters, 650 feet basically slant range directly to that. And so in 2 seconds, we've basically been able to cover the area. You can I'm going to go ahead again. No. You see that the parking lot is here, and there the lighting is such that you can't see it so well, but there are perturbations here that identify that the cars in that field of view, that the building is off in the distance. So that's after 2 seconds. After 10 seconds, it's obvious what's going on here. You've got a truck here, you've got all these cars, and then in 60 seconds, you've effectively gathered 12 million points. Extremely high resolution, high density scan. Now, and so that it's good for survey purposes, but the real purpose is to use this as a vision system for situational awareness, and I'll get into how we do that. Oh yes, and so in terms of dust penetration, I've talked about that as an important feature of this system for it to be able to work in mining environments. This slide shows a test that we've conducted. We've been working with the Canadian military. This is a test that was run at the Valcartier facility north of Quebec City. Here we have one of the Griffin helicopters, basically a Bell 412 helicopter, and we have the prototype right there staring into this cloud that's kicked up as the helicopter's landing. And so in this field of view here, you have targets that are set out in a triangular pattern. You can only see the near-field ones. They're black and white, and they go out to about 60 meters from the sensor. As you can see, it's a complete, and the dust basically is just crushed calcite dust that's being kicked up by the rotors. And in real time, the sensor is able to look through that, and it's colorized by range, so the near field objects are orange and yellow, and far field are purple, and it's able to see through that, through the special optics and processing that we have in our sensors. That technology has been patented. It's patented in Canada and the UK, and is patent pending in the States. So take that and think about it in terms of dust in an open pit. What you see in the top area here is what a conventional LiDAR would see in that image of the dusty loading area around a haul truck. You've got what the traditional LiDAR will do is it'll image the front of the dust cloud. Even if that LiDAR has multi-pulse capabilities, in situations like this, there is really only one pulse. There's the front of the dust cloud, and then there's the target behind, which is the slope, which is what you're trying to image. What you see down here is what Opal can do is it doesn't see the dust cloud, it sees through it and is able to see the slope behind, which is what you want. That's the information that you need in that kind of scenario. So that shows how Opal differentiates itself from conventional LiDAR. I'll now move, so that gave us a brief introduction to the Opal technology, what it's about, what makes it different. Then now I'm going to talk about 3DRI. 3DRI is our term for 3D real-time intelligence, and it's basically a set of software that is able to act upon the data that the Opal can gather and create information. More information, less data is what we like to think about. We don't want to deal with, or we don't want our customers to have to deal with reams and terabytes of point cloud data. They want to get the information out of that data for the purposes of different applications. And these algorithms can work on moving platforms and in real time, and where we extract the actionable information. It says runs on a standard PC. That's true. It needs to be a high-end laptop, an i7 kind of processor. We run under Linux and Windows, but it doesn't require any extremely specialized processing technology to work. There's a number of real-time features that we can apply to the data, where we can do alignment of scan-to-scan data, change detection, feature extraction, recognition, and tracking. And I'll go into those in a little detail now. So this gives you a little high-level architectural diagrams. There's the system manager software that deals with the sensors and managing the data, and then the core processing components that use that data to do important stuff with it, which is and When we get into the application section, it's these items that are really the drivers for building the real-time applications for mining. So quick view of the, so we have Opal, and our system manager can handle between 1 and 4 sensors. So you can, on any deployment, you could have 2 sensors on a shovel or a haul truck for doing, you know, to support autonomy or to do other applications. The sensor manager can talk to them, merges the data together. And in a simple sense, if all you were doing was using the Opal for survey applications, it would just be system manager and either using an API to an existing system or our 3D viewer to gather the data and manage it and export it. The core plugins register is where we can take the data that it comes from the sensor and it, take it and register it into geological geographical coordinates, be it using external GPS. The sensors have an IMU on board, so they give a little bit of information about them. That's mostly to deal with the heavy vibration that it's subjected to, so that we can understand that and remove that as part of the alignment process. We also have 2 levels of filtering for noise, multipath effects, that sort of thing, getting rid of that noise, as well as the obscurance. There are times when our sensor will see the obscurant because there's nothing but dust in its image path, and we have the ability to identify that and remove it so that it's not false positive data that's worked upon. And then there's the model, which is the bridge into the higher level processing, which takes all the data in, creates a single georeference model, and allows passes that information off to higher level processing to do tracking, object recognition, that sort of thing. The 3D RLine plugin is for where if to help in cases where you may be in GPS denied situations, or you have noisy GPS, or you have no GPS at all, and you just want and you're moving slowly, we are able to take natural features within the scan data and align them one to the other, and so that they so basically auto registers the data. It does not require special reference markers. It just uses natural features in the scan data to do that. Now, obviously, this wouldn't work on a flat plane because there's no features there, but in a mine site there's often lots of features that are useful for that software to do its job. Then there's the segmentation module, which takes the data, removes the ground plane, and just segments out the blocks of data that are the interesting things, the moving things that are objects or obstacles, also and unmoving obstacles as well. If there's waste that's been deposited on the bench and you want to identify that as an obstacle for a haul truck that you don't want it to run over, then it can extract that and identify it. There's the detect module, which for doing change detection. This is where if you have a base scan data and you want to see what's changed in the environment in the last hour, last day, last 2 weeks, you have your base data, you gather new data, and it's able to align them and align the 2 data sets and highlight the changes that have occurred there. With a database of known objects, like different haul trucks or haul survey trucks, human pattern of what a human is, the system can actually look at the data blocks that it segments out and give an identification of what that object is. And then once we identify it, we can then track it to a high degree of precision. Even if it hasn't been identified, we can track objects as they move, as the identification process is ongoing. So that gives you a very rapid overview of Opal technology, the software that supports that technology to create mining applications, real-time applications that we look to create to support mine autonomy. Initially, we aren't going straight into autonomous work. We're looking at developing applications for operator assist, but we think it's a progression of technologies as we move forward. So motivation behind this is, and this is where PecTech has been a great help to us. NEPTech is not a mining company. We don't know the mining space. We have technology. PecTech has been helping us to work with the end customers, Barrick and Tech, and to identify to us the functional specifications of the systems that that would be useful to the customers that are in the mining space. And we know, and working with them, we know that we're, mining industry is pushing forward, trying to increase safety and productivity through automation, and automation is key to that. And for automation to work, you need a very capable machine vision system to make that happen. And so we believe that, you know, the real-time 3D robot vision that's necessary for autonomy is our sensors that give you an accurate view of your surroundings, work in real time, and work while moving in vibration, harsh environments, and the software intelligence to be able to get the actionable data from that 3D data and do something that's of use. So working with Tech and Barrick, and our partners Peck Tech, we've identified a number of applications that are of high value and that were worthwhile looking at. And the number one thing that we're looking at primarily is truck spotting, helping trucks park beside the shovels accurately without respotting, helping identify any obstacles that may be in their way, you know, that sort of thing. In addition, there are other applications that are listed there, volume measurements, road profile monitoring, fragmentation analysis, and I'll talk about each of those. And I should also note that when we began this process, it was Barrick and Tech that we were working with, but since then we've been Freeport-McMoRan has also indicated an interest and is participating with us now in this endeavor. So challenges, we've gone through that, dust, weather, operator errors, hazardous environment. This is the challenges we have to create such a system. So truck spotting, I don't think I have to go through too much in detail about what truck spotting is, but the intent is to try and support double-sided loading as much as possible for all the clients that want to be able to do it and have the mine geometries that would allow you to support that. We know that that's helps to optimize production and just keeps that shovel working instead of waiting for the next shovel to spot. So again, a little deeper look at the motivations for this spot assist is you know, minimize the number of times the truck has to respot itself beside the shovel. Reduce the swing time so that you're loading quicker and reducing the time that the shovel is spent moving to load. Improve the loading process. Also reduce the number of collisions. You provide a safety system for proximity to the shovel and the haul truck operations around it, and the shovel obviously hitting the truck. Helping to create even loads in the truck, reduce tire wear and impact to the tires, and then by being more accurate with the loading of the truck, less work around the on the bench cleaning things up, and also with a spot assist system, this will help to reduce the training requirements, help the drivers become proficient at this more quickly, especially in those areas where there are labor shortages for skilled drivers. And so in terms of return on investment, you know, increase the ability to do double-side loading and at mine sites, reduce bucket swing time, reduce occurrence of spots and shovel collisions, and they reduced operator training. So we believe that based on the numbers that we've been working on with Barrick and Tech, that the return on investment for such a system is less than 12 months. So what is the spot assist system and how does it work? Well, we are in the process of creating the functional requirements for this right now. We are looking at whether it's one sensor or if it's two sensors, if it's on the shovel or maybe it's not on the shovel. It's somewhere near the shovel where it can see the interactions. The blue area here represents the scan area that one scanner is able to scan in that position. And so you need to know that, or to remember, as the shovel is moving back and forth, that scan area is moving back and forth as well. So we're gathering lots of additional information that can be used for add-on applications, like looking at the active face for doing fragmentation analysis, looking at the bin of the haul truck as it's pulling away for looking at the load volume in the bin, how that load has been distributed. But in terms of requirements for the system, is it has to be rugged, has to survive, has to work all the time, be able to take the rigors of the environment of working on that shovel, be reliable and accurate, be able to provide data to the haul truck operator to tell him to park that truck in the right spot every time. We do envision that the shovel operator will have an interface also that, if need be, he can interact with. And now the intent is for the shovel operator to not have to. But if there's a need to reset where he wants the spotting position to be, he can do that. Also, it can give him feedback about obstacles that are in the way. But primarily, this is a steering system, a system that provides cueing information to the haul truck driver as he approaches from the pre-spot position into his spotted position beside the shovel. So here's a little mosaic of scan data that was taken. This was taken at Gold Strike. Here we see, this was taken back in December of this year, or sorry, of 2012. We have the scanner sitting on a tripod. Here is its representation in the scan data. What this shows, this is about 20 seconds of data as a haul truck left the side of a shovel. You see it there in its initial position where it was stationary, and then the path it took as it moved out. This is far more data than we need to track that shovel. But it just represents the kind of data that we get. We've got the model of the benches and the active face and the shovel there. It shows the path that the shovel took as it passed under the cable arches and off out of the area. So what we're looking to do is to take that sensor, and the next day phase of our project is going to be taking the sensor, putting it on a shovel, and having it gather data while it operates. And this will help us tune the algorithms and the software that we develop for the actual proof of concept spotting application. Another set of scan data, just showing some of the data. This time the point of interest we had, it's the sensor was set up on top of the muck pile looking down as the shovel was loading the truck. We couldn't get too close to the edge, so that's why there's some the data's kind of cut off here as the edge. But there's the haul truck, there's the shovel, and the high-resolution data that was taken over time, so the shovel, dozer's shown at two positions. And just the kind of information that we can gather from the data, knowing the positions exactly of those trucks relative to the shovel. As I mentioned, there are additional applications that we're looking to make use of. So the first one we're focused on is the spot assist, but we've also been working with tech at these other potential applications like haul truck bin volume and load distribution. Here again, we can use the same data that we gathered to help position the truck next to the shovel, and not in real time, but at a rate that's desired by the customer. For every truck that leaves, we take a snapshot of that data and process it. So basically, we take the data, we reorient it, we segment out the important part, which is the load. In the bin, we know which truck it is, so we know what the volume of the empty bin is, and then we can calculate the volume that's that's been loaded in that bin. And we've done prototype level processing, offline processing that has shown that this is a very viable thing to do. Another slide showing the loaded bin segmented out. Another potential application that we've been looking at is fragmentation analysis. Again, there's different places where we can gather this data from the active face. As the shovel is sweeping around to load the trucks, the scan area will cover the active face. We'll be able to map the toe and the crest. We'll also be able to gather high resolution data of the particles on that slope. And so we created a very quick prototype of a fragmentation analysis algorithm that we think has some merit. So this is the raw, the raw unsmoothed data that we got from the scan data of this small area within the muck pile. Again, it was a quick prototype, so we just focused in on one area. So the steps, again, get the data, smooth it, create a mesh of that data, so create a surface. And then in that surface, we classify and segment out each of the blocks and then calculate their size based on what we can see of the particles relative to an equivalent sphere, and then present particle size distribution. So here again, we have the image of the picture of the fragmented material that we looked at, and then this colorized data is what the algorithm spat out. And the colorization, the only importance about the colorization is that this is what it identified as individual blocks and that was used for its calculation of the distribution. It just was a graphical means of us seeing what the output of that prototype algorithm was able to do. And then we were able to generate basically from that data a fragmentation analysis, particle size distribution. This kind of application could be done, again, on an as-needed basis every hour, every day at the face. The data from this, we're told by our clients, is very important information that's fed back into blast planning to ensure that, you know, you've got the optimal diggability of the face, you're getting the particle sizes that you want. Should note that as I indicated, our size resolution is down to about a centimeter. We can't distinguish particles much smaller than a centimeter. So that becomes the bottom bin. Anything less than a centimeter is just all lumped together. So just to wrap up so Opal and 3DRI. New products on the market that we've developed. We've taken this space technology and brought it into an aerospace technology, brought it into the commercial marketplace to provide the sensor intelligence to be able to support machine autonomy and semi-autonomous operation. We're looking to improve safety and process monitoring and optimization, and essentially that we look at, you know, the capital expenditure to put Opal and 3DRI into a system is we want to see it as being a single purchase of capital equipment that then you add on new and different applications on top of it. So in the case of you do spot assist, but you're by virtue of that you're gathering all this extra data that can be used for doing mapping of the active face, fragmentation analysis, looking at bin volume data. And I've focused primarily on the sensors on a shovel. They could easily be put on a haul truck for that purpose, used on a haul truck as a vision system for them. And in there, the secondary effects of that is that you could have a system that's also, while the truck is driving, you could monitor the condition of the roadway, the berm height, if there's a need for changes there, even dust conditions, to call in water abatement if it sees that the dust that's being kicked up is higher than a threshold that's interested in. There's a lot of different applications that we can use this 3D data for. That ends my the presentation part of this. If I'll open it up to questions, if there are any from the floor, or for me, or for Dan.
You mentioned that you can calculate the volume of the truck body, so many cubic meters. I assume you've done a verification of the numbers, what type of accuracy, how close can you get to what you think you...
Work that we did on the volume was very preliminary, as just sort of a proof of concept. We believe that we can get within 10% of the actual, probably less than that, of what the actual volume is. But we still need to do work quantifying and characterizing that capability.
For that particular truck they took the image of, we got the the box specs from Goldstrike, and I think it was like a 98% fit to what the volume should have been. It was preliminary though.
Yeah.
The other question is, what about, have you done any matching on the particle size distributions?
You know, in the truck?
Well, just like you say, you do an image of the particles of the material, and you've got a theoretical distribution. Have you actually checked it to run?
Yeah, that is yet to be done. We need to do a lot of some more work to verify that. And you know, it is a sensor that sees the outside face. We can't know how big, you know, we can see what the external expression of that particle is, but if it's connected to a larger part, you know, if it is actually bigger, then you don't know that. But I mean, vision-based systems have the same. You can only see what you can see.
Have you looked at using this technology for underground applications?
We are looking at that. We have been focused primarily on open pit for now, but absolutely there are interests in doing that. We are looking to certify ourselves, certify the sensor for underground applications, to ensure that it's safe for volatile environments, that it poses no explosion safety. We haven't completed that certification yet. The one thing that we do need to be mindful of with our sensor, it has a minimum range. It can't see in 2 meters is its minimum range, and that's based on the time of flight technology and that's inside the sensor. But we feel that it could still be quite a useful tool for mapping underground.
Yeah, Evan presented a bunch of different potential applications. I'm just curious, from the miner's perspective, which one is most interesting, or where do you see the real potential here?
Yeah, I guess from our customers and from our point of view too, we were focusing on the spot assist application, just because that was like the one that you could get like a very clearly defined ROI that would pay for the development costs. So I think that's like kind of the low-hanging fruit. I think the really encouraging part, and this is what Tech and Barrick think so as well, is that while you're doing that AutoSpot application, you can also, like Evan said, get that additional data. And then if you want to tackle like truck fill factors or fragmentation, or even just kind of monitoring what's going on in the working area, you can do that as well. So I'd say for now, like truck spotting, but for sure there's other things we can explore at the same time while kind of truck spotting pays for it.
So you mentioned before that you did some testing with the penetration through dust, so calcites. If the dust is full of silicates, does it make any difference?
Oh, sorry, no, it doesn't make any difference. We've done it through silicates as well. We did a number of trials in the UK again for helicopter. They had a program for their helicopters. They used a standard dust called MIL 810, which is basically a silica dust that's used for dust penetration tests in certification labs, the focus there was to get a quantifiable dust sample that is equivalent to Iraqi and Afghanistan dust, which is a very very powdery, it's a terrible situation for those helicopters trying to land in that. So yes, silicate versus calcite. We used calcite in Valcarce just because it was easily obtained and at a relatively low cost.
And does the system work in dense fog and heavy rain as well?
Yes, it does. It does. Your ranging capabilities are limited, but you still are able to range to reasonable distances up to 50, 100 meters through quite dense fog. And rain is actually a fairly simple problem because the particle sizes are so large that we just the beam goes around them essentially. Snow is more difficult, and we have done snow trials again at Valcarce, landing, generating whiteout clouds, because that's another issue for helicopter pilots that we're trying to address as well. Thank you very much.